Hey, it's Lauren. Thank you so much for listening to The Afterlife. Enjoy the episode. This episode has been sponsored by my business, Lauren Grace Inspirations. I'm a business and life mentor, a workshop facilitator, a soul-led entrepreneur, and host of The Afterlife podcast. I'm passionate about supporting people like you through transformative courses, mentorship, and trainings so that you can live the life that you choose. I love all things time management and helping the people that I work with to master their mindset. I truly believe that life is a precious gift, and when we can learn to be at one with our thoughts, when we can learn to love ourselves, control and master our time, we really can live an extraordinary life. I have a whole bunch of free offers on my website, and I strongly encourage you to go and check them out. I'd love to keep in touch with you. You can find me over at Lauren Grace Inspirations on all the socials, as well as laurengraceinspirations.com. And I strongly encourage you to sign up for my newsletter. 2 times a month, at least, I send a positive newsletter that's all about helping you to live the best life possible. I always include a card of the day, a business or a strategy tip, and I also include a spiritual lesson. I would love to have you join me, and I'd love to join you on your journey. Thank you and enjoy the episode. Hi, Lauren Grace here, and welcome to the Afterlife podcast, joined today by Allison Holly. She is an Andromedan starseed channel and author of the books, The Era of the True Creator and Ecstatic Playground. After experiencing a profound awakening in 2012, good year for it, that's for sure, Allison began spontaneously channeling and receiving visions of the world to come. She left her former life to integrate these higher frequency downloads and eventually began teaching and channeling for others. Allison now offers channel transmissions, activations, and guidance worldwide to assist in our current global awakening. And I am covered head to toe in goosebumps. Allison, welcome. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Hi, Lauren. Thank you so much for having me. And kind of short notice too, as we jumped on this together. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I think that, you know, everything really is divine timing. So Alice and I just sort of recently connect, and then she booked in, and, you know, now we're here. It just seems like no time has gone. One of the things that I really trust is sort of the divine timing of everything. And I would imagine that you also have the same sort of thinking process.
I absolutely do. It is frequency alignment. And yeah, when frequency alignment happens, things tend to go very quickly, and also with this beautiful harmonization within the, you know, landscape that we're dancing in. So yeah, I definitely play with divine timing.
So today we're going to be talking about some pretty big subjects. I know our listener at home is like, ooh, getting into a channeling conversation. We'll probably talk on it a little bit because it'll come up, but today we're actually not going to be focusing on Allison's work as a channel as much as the content that she has channeled and sort of the information that's really come out of a lot of that. So I really wanted to talk with you today, Allison, about the concepts of being separate from the divine, separate from God, separate from the creator, insert whatever word you want to put into that that's going to feel comfortable with you. I want to talk about working with the ego. I've kind of had a love-hate relationship with my ego, as I'm sure many of us have. And so I'm really looking at how can I work with it? How can I nurture it? And I think that our listener at home can really probably connect with that journey as well. I also want to talk about the importance of listening to and being guided and wondering about your thoughts around that in terms of our emotions. Like, do we have this sort of secret little sense that's going off that's telling us when things are a go and things are not, when we should move forward and when we should hold back? And then, of course, we're going to be talking about living the life of joy and fun and joyful creation. Yes. And so I think we should start off with, you know, you have this quote in the book which says, life is never a test. It is a game, a theatrical play in which we are the directors. And I just absolutely love that as a starting point for our conversation together. So before we get into the whole idea of, are we the creators in this theatrical play? And if so, are we, you know, are we cast? Are we like the first person? Are we the main character or not? Let's go into a little bit about where your spiritual journey began. I know I mentioned 2012. Did you have any sort of inclination that there was this whole other world that you hadn't necessarily tapped into before that time? Or is that when it really all started?
I definitely had an inclination, but it wasn't until it was underway that I started to say, oh, this is confirming everything that I had felt. Yeah. And so really what it was is how mine started was I went through a breakup, a disillusionment of a relationship. And as that was occurring, and looked back on this, why does it tend to happen that we go through these awakenings when we also go through intense events, or, you know, things kind of breaking down in our world? And it's because the way that we live day to day is very much built within kind of traveling down the mental paradigm of what we already know. And so when something upsets that mental paradigm, it actually creates an opening for light and new information to come through. Oh, and so a lot of people, things break down and then we go, whoa, you know, there's this whole other world that we have not had the ability to perceive. So that's what happened with me. I went through a really intense awakening. And I say intense. And by the way, I have a fireplace here. So if you're watching this on the video, I'm getting very hot and my eyes are watering. So that's why.
That's funny. That's usually me in Australia. That's where I'm based. And I'm always like so hot and can't have the fan on because it affects the sound quality. So
yes, the fan that normally conditions the fireplace is off so that the sound is better. And I'm like, whoa.
You need to take off your hoodie at any time. That's all good.
So little interlude there. But, you know, I went through this breakup and all of the sudden, I mean, some people have awakenings where things happen gradually and it's an aha moment and things like that. Mine was everything's breaking down and everything's opening up. It was a pretty intense one. Yeah. There were a few times when I started spontaneously channeling. So that's how it started for me. It was just, I'd pull the car over and start transmitting a message. And there, most of the time for several months, and I hadn't done any plant medicine or anything at this point. And for several months, it felt like I was on a psychedelic journey. So I was not seeing what I was usually seeing. Things, time would speed up and slow down, which was really fascinating. That was one of my favorite experiences at the beginning. And also things would become what we would call psychedelic. Sort of the best way I could describe that is really, really shifting to the point where functioning as a regular human being was pretty trippy. And of course, being able to look back on this with what I've learned and integrated since then, I see that I was starting to expand into higher frequency dimensions and perceive within those dimensions. And those higher frequency dimensions, they are psychedelic in nature, what we would call psychedelic, because they operate in sacred geometry and they operate outside of the realms of time. So I was getting these first human glimpses, you know, from my human perspective, seeing it for the first time. And it was pretty intense.
Allison, because to me, you know, like you're going through a breakup and then all of a sudden all these crazy things happen. And I think that, you know, for me as a spiritual being in the human body, I find it difficult to ground myself, to not always be in my top chakras. I find it difficult at times to stop overthinking, to be in the present moment. And then let alone me knowing a lot of the things I know. Like I remember one time a few years ago,
I got completely overwhelmed and I quit spirituality for almost 5 years. And like, I wouldn't talk to anyone about it. If anyone said, oh yeah, so-and-so is a medium, I'd be like, I don't even know what that is. You know, I just, that being said, I went all in on Eckhart Tolle's work. I went all in those years. That was it. I just did The Power of Now and A New Earth. And I feel like that saved me in a lot of ways. But for you, I mean, you talked sort of there about the time, how that was really fascinating, but were there any opportunity, like, did you have people to reach out to? I mean, how were you able to navigate this, especially spontaneously? That might have been a little bit unnerving.
You know what's really fascinating about it is it was more comfortable.
Wow.
I felt better. Nice. Yeah. And the reason that that's funny is because the way that I'm built, you know, depending on what people perceive of with other lifetimes and things like that, this is my first Earth experience as a human. So
lucky.
It felt very unfamiliar. Kinda, yeah. I haven't been inundated in this game very much. I really haven't. And so I've got largely a perspective that is more comfortable with those frequencies. So when I went through this awakening, I was like, as I said, it was a bit of a confirmation. It was a huge confirmation that all of the things that I had been sensing, I was now seeing on that level of, on that dimensional level. So it was just, it was almost like I'm walking in a dark room for my whole life going, God, I really know that this is not what everybody's telling me it is. And then the lights turn on a bit and I'm like, yeah, I knew it. And the part that was uncomfortable was trying to communicate that to other people.
Yes.
You know, in 2012, it was still, I wouldn't say early on in this global awakening, but it was early enough that there weren't a lot of people around me that were also feeling and experiencing this. And truly, I think that an awakening process, it's a solo journey, whether you've got 10 people around you or not, because it is our own individual consciousness shifting. Yeah. And so I did meet my twin flame at that time and we got married. So we really had each other. And I mean, we were able to truly support and be there for each other. It was a pretty huge gift. We're no longer together, which I think is actually a really beautiful thing to tell people, that this is not always the way that, you know, a twin flame journey goes, but we won't go too much into that.
Yeah.
But I will say that in the beginning, especially, it was so incredibly supportive. And it was one of the main supports that I had. I also had, you know, even though my mom, my parents aren't necessarily, they're not in this awakening journey. I have very supportive family. So even though I was talking about, wow, like, you know, I'm channeling and ETs are coming through, like also I'm an alien and all of these things, I had the most supportive family. Every member of my family was like, hey, we've got you. So I had that. And
I can see your parents in the kitchen and they're like making dinner and you're over and they're going, I don't, well, what do we entertain this? I mean, we just let it ride. She's
let
got
her
a
be.
Good head on her shoulders. She's like,
yes. You know, I think it really speaks to that. We're all so much more alike than different. And we all feel something else. We all feel that there's something beyond the perceivable.
Vibes, and right? We get vibes from people. I remember I was promoting one time that I'm doing mediumship on, you know, Zoom or whatever. And somebody wrote, this is bullshit. And I was like, and I got upset for a second. And then I went, okay, like, fair enough. You don't understand that energy is a feeling and that, you know, I can feel a vibe in a movie, for example. We can feel the energy and the emotions that the actor is emitting.
Yes.
You know, and they're in a movie that we're watching, let alone actually having a communication or, you know, picking up on someone's energy via Facebook. It was just, yeah, I've had a couple of those conversations with people where they go, but how does it work? And you go, it's just feelings, you know, we all feel, and you can tap in, like, just, you know, because you and I aren't in the same country, doesn't mean we can't feel what each other is putting out there.
Sorry, there was a little freeze.
I was just saying, just because we're not in the same country doesn't mean that you and I can't feel what each other's putting out there.
Absolutely. And we're in such a unique time where, one, this is really a global wave, right? So it's not just a couple people experiencing these things. It really is, collectively, we are shifting massively. And what we have going on spiritually, there's so much that even 10 years ago, many people were channeling that was not in the public domain. And now science is measuring the same things that we have been talking about. There's just so much that's now being doubly, triply confirmed in many directions. And the more that we experience this, the more that comes up in all directions, and it's just converging. It's really coming together. Mm-hmm. So, and also a lot of times the people who get really upset about it are the ones that want to believe it the most, are really feeling that, but you know, it has to be a personal experience. No matter what it is, you know, so.
Well, that brings us into, like, there's so many things that we're going to talk about today in our time together. And, you know, one of them is about the importance of letting go of the mental struggle. And I think that, you know, when you're talking about how maybe some of the people who get triggered by this stuff or the people who want to believe it, it's because they almost maybe in a way are really wanting to intellectualize everything and trying to puzzle it out and make it logical. Whereas a lot of spiritual concepts, they just are because we believe them, but we feel them or know them to be true, not necessarily know them from a mind's point of view. Before we kind of get into that, because I feel like that's really nicely connected to the ego and defending our mental positions and, you know, the paradigms that we all kind of like have and carry along with us along the journey. Let's go back to the whole concept of being in the theatrical play. So I'd love to know about the idea of joyful creation, being in the theatrical play. So what does that mean exactly? Are we creators? And how is it that we've forgotten that that's what we're here to do?
Well, and again, you know, for some people, this is going to feel really comforting. And for others, it's going to feel really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But we came here to play a game, you know, and the game is forgetting that we are God. The game is believing that we're separate from each other. Because when we know that we're God, we inherently know oneness. And so the denser the layer of reality, the denser the realm that we're experiencing our consciousness in, the more and more separate we feel. So we can imagine that our human consciousness is sort of like, in fact, this is the vision that I've gotten for it. It's the cover of my second book, Ecstatic Playground, where we are the light, right? We are in the void and we are the light from source. And that light is projected. And then this human experience is like a crystal. It's like a quartz crystal. And we shine that light through the quartz and it becomes many different colors. And so that's just like our human experience. There's more and more and more separation for the purpose of creation. We have more colors to paint with. We have more variety to experience. And we can only really do that if we have the perception of separation. We embody this and we start to, you know, we kind of all drink the Kool-Aid by coming into the dense layer of reality and going, oh, it feels like I'm separate. And then we hear the stories, right? We receive the programming. Oh, we are separate. You're you. Oh, look, I'm Allison. Oh, and maybe I've done something wrong. Maybe I did this right. So we get praise and blame and we're indoctrinated into all of these programs of conditioning of being a human. And that's for the purpose of playing and creating as God, experiencing these dense realms, which inherently separates us from unity consciousness, from the knowledge that we're the creators. And so we want this, but then we forget that that's what we did, right? Because inherent to denser frequencies is forgetfulness. How many of us feel infinite bliss and we feel wonderful and we have one day where it's just, wow, I get it. I get it. And then the next day we're, you know, telling somebody off and feeling like a dense, you know,
the electrical bills here again, damn it.
Exactly. It is inherent to these denser frequencies where we just kind of forget. And so part of this awakening process is one that collectively all of humanity is actually moving up in frequencies. There are higher frequencies available to us now. And part of that is the remembrance. And the remembrance is, oh, I signed up for this. Oh, it's not a test because there's not right and wrong. It's a game. It's a game of creation that we get to involve ourselves with, and we get to decide to be conscious, to be conscious creators, or we get to decide to stay unconscious and be unconscious creators. Either way, we are creating, and we're actually creating all of it. In fact, far more than we can even conceive of, and there isn't any punishment involved. There's a lot of the collective paradigm that for a very long time, and possibly still, is saying this life is a test, or even it's a school, which, you know, is perhaps a more kind way of putting it. But there's still inherent in those beliefs, especially believing that it's a test, that we can do something wrong. And this is another thing that's very hard. I mean, it's hard for me to even hear it, and I channel it all the time. We can't do it wrong. We can't make mistakes. There isn't actually right and wrong when we go into higher frequencies, because there isn't separation. There can only be right and wrong when we are perceiving separation. When we're one, all is one and all is now. And when we come into denser frequencies, we start to separate. And part of that separation process is polarizing. It's separation. So I'm me, and even within myself, there's separation. I am good and bad. I am right and wrong. Yeah. And all of these things break down and down and down until we're so separate that we're separate even from ourselves. And so that's how we get the perception of right and wrong. And as we travel into higher frequencies, we recognize there isn't right and wrong. And what keeps us, so many people, I'll just give this, hope it's not too much of a tangent.
No.
But so many people fear letting go of right and wrong because they unconsciously feel that if we let go of that way of looking at things, that we will all kill each other, that we'll all hurt each other, that we will inherently choose wrong if we don't somehow tell each other that there is right and wrong and we need to do the right thing. But the beautiful thing is when we change our frequency and we move up in frequency, we become closer to those unified frequencies. And in unified frequencies, we have zero desire to harm each other. We only want to love each other because we love ourselves. So it all comes back together, and we don't need to sort of fear going into these realms where, you know, forgiveness doesn't exist because there's never been any wrong. We simply move into presence. It's a lot. It's a whole realm of moving beyond binaries. And, you know, again, I recognize that this could be uncomfortable for some people.
Well, why do you think it would be uncomfortable? Because they have to take the responsibility, or because they have to re-examine their life and their mental positions? I mean, as I move further into my own spiritual journey and my own truth and growing in love for myself and understanding that I'm doing the best that I can and there's nothing wrong with that. And I learned a lot, like from one of my previous guests, about being compassionate with myself and my journey instead of seeing the wrong or the I should have done that better, you know, with that kind of tone as well. Right. To really see the like to look at it with compassion and look at it with understanding and love. And yeah. And actually, you know, talk about tangents. I think we'll go on 50,000 today. But you know, the other day I was like, I can't remember what I was thinking about, but I think I was thinking about something. And then I went, I'm gonna see this through the eyes of love. And I remember I learned that from Gabby Bernstein, and I thought, I'm going to see it through the eyes of love. I'm going to see it through the eyes of love. And all of a sudden, on the right side of my body, all above my shoulder into my head, I felt fuzz like I'd never felt anything before, this static fuzz. And I was like, I'm going to see through the eyes of love. And all I could feel with this crazy electricity. And then I went, okay, guys, like, I got it. That's like really it's a bit much. You know, but as I kind of navigate and go through this, and maybe this is me adding a negative tone to it, but I just look around and I see that a lot of the things that we get caught up with is really bullshit.
Yeah. Yep.
And I go, like, this is just stuff that's keeping us small and making us distracted from, you know, all of the beauty and all of the gold that is just sitting here waiting for us to tap into. And it's like an emotional thing. Yeah. Any thoughts on that before we kind of, because there's so many things I want to talk to you about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. It actually draws into a concept that I was delivered that I put in my first book. And that is that most of what we're engaging with is drama. And the new definition of drama is really anything that puts our power outside of ourselves, or relooping programs. Okay. So true creation. So the first book is The Era of the True Creator, and true creation is to be present when we create, but drama is to reloop paradigms or programs. Ah. And so, you know, this kind of leads, it's actually not a tangent because it kind of leads right into talking about the mental paradigm.
Yeah.
And how we really get kind of caught in that. So I'm going to go right into it.
Yeah.
The mind is built to repeat programs. And I could break it into what was told to me is the lower mind or the higher mind. Okay. So within the lower mind, our experience is all about, I've received this program, I'm going to repeat it. And this is largely, in fact, I would say it's all unconscious, because when we become conscious of it, the game's up, right? Then we're in a new game.
That's
consciousness right. Changes the game.
Yeah.
And so when we are in the process of repeating programs, we have these sort of blinders on, and we are only going to be able to see life as we are have already programmed in. What that means is we're just going to perpetuate, you know, Joe Dispenza talks a lot about this. If you ever listen to him,
yes,
breaking the habit of who we were yesterday,
yes,
right? Because with those programs, we're just going to be repeating who we were yesterday. And this is why when we go through these awakenings, we have these shifts in consciousness, and it breaks us up and we become new people. We become more like our true selves, our higher selves, and we drop the programming. So when we talk about the lower mind, that's repeating programs. The higher mind is the observer mind. The observer mind is presence. The observer mind is witnessing. And as we witness, the heart leads and the mind witnesses what's going on, what we're perceiving. The mind actually gets to then sort of be the little kid that says, wow, isn't this all really beautiful? And what happens with the observer mind is it's no longer split into polarity and judgment. So one of the ways that we can enter the observer mind is by holding both polarities at the same time. In fact, these are ancient meditation techniques where we hold two things that our mind says are separate, conflicting. We hold them at the same time. And if we can hold them in balance, boom, we reach the third part, the Godhead. And we recognize and we witness ourselves from that perspective of, oh, it's all perfect. and I get to have these polarized experiences. So I did go a little bit off, but I'm not sure if it ended back where you, where
you started. No, I'm happy to be guided, you know, however, I mean, I hear in the back of my mind that like a listener at home, you know, questioning the whole, because I think one of the things that people get caught up in, and I'd love to know your opinion on this, is, well, where did these ideas and old conditioned programs come from? And where did this get derived from? And for me, I've always felt that that was a waste of time because, and no, like if someone wants to do that, that's fine. But for me, I go, it doesn't matter how you got it, you have it, like shift, and now we can shift it. So
yes.
I can see how it would be triggering for some people to kind of understand their power. But Eckhart Tolle's got this fabulous line that I heard him say. I don't know if it was in a talk or something, but it's basically talking about how people, you know, some of them just need more suffering. And then they'll be, and I'm not saying that he's saying they need it, but they want more suffering. And then as soon as they're ready to stop suffering, then they're going to start to look at the mind programming that we have, the conditioned mind patterns that we keep having, the need for the ego to defend the mental position, the behavior and the roles that we keep playing, you know, all this stuff will start to just go, wait a minute, these are just like characteristics, you know, like I'm really good at that, or I'm not good at that, or this is a thing that, you know, is about my personality and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and I love that idea of kind of understanding that, yeah, we do show up in the right time for us. And some of us do need to suffer a little bit more. And I'm sure we can both relate to that, where it's like, yeah, I guess I had to go through some of these difficult times to kind of break down, and then I could break through again and move into the next phase. But that does take a lot of, I don't know, awareness, but like almost you kind of have to sort of really be okay with the fact that maybe you've created some situations in your life that really aren't glamorous, sexy, or fun. And I think that's what gets to be difficult, isn't it?
It's this really beautiful, almost full circle loop, because we come into this place where we're like, oh my God, what do you mean I'm responsible for this? What do you mean I've caused my own suffering? Yeah. And that feels, it can feel like a shock at first. We can really resist it and really want to put that on other people. And then we come into this place where, okay, maybe I can turn this into something for my benefit. And maybe I can allow myself to say, okay, I don't know what caused all of this, but I'm now responsible and I'm going to shift my consciousness and I'm going to take charge here. And then we go through this whole process of, I feel like I'm not in control because I'm trying to change, but I kind of can't because some of that programming is pretty deep and very unconscious. In fact, everything is programming in this human sphere. It's all stories. It's all stories.
Yeah.
And when we're deeply, deeply present, we disengage with so much of the human sphere that we almost don't know how to connect with each other, to relate, to live life, you know? As you know, some of the visions, my next book is going to be about returning to the Garden of Eden templates. And we are addicted to doing, and largely the Garden of Eden is receiving and existing. And we just don't know how to do that, even though we think it sounds great. So then kind of taking this whole thing full circle is we come into this place where we're, okay, I'm present. Okay, I'm taking charge of my life. Okay, I'm responsible. And now I really recognize there is no right or wrong. And so it's okay. And in fact, it's part of what I came here for, to experience the realms of separation where I have perpetuated my own suffering. And then we deeply forgive ourselves for that, right? Because at the beginning, we're like, oh, I'm not creating this. And then when we kind of go full circle, we're like, okay, I have created that, and it would be okay if I created that again, because there's no wrong. So it's really kind of a fascinating process. And then, you know, the full creation story, we want to do it again. We're going to self-actualize. We're going to all lift into these beautiful high frequencies.
Not me. I'm not coming back. that to one of my guests and she's like, you better do some work then. You got to get all, you better clean up all your karma and all your stuff. And I was like, all right. Where's that part?
Exactly. Exactly. I hear a lot of people say that. I don't know how I signed up for this, but this is the last one. Yeah. And oddly, I wouldn't even say it's a starseed perspective, because I know plenty of starseeds who are like, what am I doing here? This is miserable. And trust me, I have felt that. But there's such a huge part of me that's like, oh, this is the coolest. It makes me feel emotional. This is the coolest game. It's really wild. And it has not been all roses for me. And I still feel that way. Maybe I'm still a little fresh, but wow, what a wild, wild game to separate from ourselves.
I think like a big part of it is kind of that, you know, and I was talking about this with someone recently who lost a loved one. And it's almost like the higher self knows it's all good, knows it's all working out in divine order. There's nothing that's a big deal, basically. Yeah. But then there's the ego part, the lower self, the mind, that wants to make things a problem. And I know that for myself, for example, you know, I notice when I am just having a peaceful, amazing day, and then my mind, my ego, the lower part comes in. It's like, remember that thing that happened 15 years ago?
Let's mess it up.
Remember that? Remember when you did that? It's like, and then it almost like tries to kind of throw you off course. And when you understand the two minds in a way and become, and that's why I think, you know, a big part of my, you know, of the work that I do and the spiritual journey that I'm on is a lot about being in the here and now and the present, being conscious of what's happening. I mean, number one, it's going to set you up for a successful life because you're going to be able to be more of a powerful manifester by being here in the now, and you don't get caught up in the future or the past. You're just dealing with what is, you know, and you see all the beauty. But, you know, it's kind of going, oh, wait a minute, I can see myself wanting to get caught up in that story. I can see my mind trying to go, what about that? And so I think that's where a lot of people get stuck, is they allow those stories to come through, or they don't have the tools or the systems in which to quiet or replace the thoughts. Yes. Quiet the mind, replace the thoughts, look at the situation with compassion and joy, and or just compassion and understanding. Oh yeah, I can see you, I can see you, girl, just working away over there, as like, yeah, my mind is chattering away. And one of the things that I do, and I learned this from Michael Singer, is you kind of imagine yourself outside of yourself to the left. Sometimes I can see myself there and I'll be like, oh, blah blah blah, and I'll go, girl, it's all good, I got this, go to sleep. Yeah. And like, I, and then I kind of like put myself beside myself in meditation, and she'll go, yeah, oh, but no, it's all right, I got this, go to sleep. Yes. And then I watch her. So I'd love to know your thoughts on that. And also, I guess a lot about how to navigate the ego and how to navigate the mind. And, you know, this is like a really long-winded question with many different parts, and you just feel free, yeah, to jump on whatever one. But I do also want to bring up, you know, I heard someone at home say, yeah, but certain things are wrong. Like stealing is wrong, and murdering is wrong, and corruption is wrong, and all these, right? Those are wrong things. So how can you say there's no wrong? But then again, that's the ego, right? So yeah, it's a lot.
It is a lot. Being human's a lot.
Yeah.
Let me put that a different way. There is right and wrong in the realms that we're experiencing. And the realms that we're moving into, we perceive it differently. And the way that we perceive it is that everything is perfect. Everything is always in harmony. And the beautiful thing about learning to not believe so much the paradigm that we're in, but starting to look toward those higher frequencies, is that we operate with the consciousness of those frequencies, which means when we're here, and we see things in right and wrong, yes, that exists here on this level. But if we go about trying to change this level with the thinking from this level, well, we see how far it's gotten us. We've actually got to view it from that higher perspective. And even though this is why I brought up A lot of people fear letting go of right and wrong because we think then we're all just going to kill each other. But what actually happens is we then perceive from love and we place love in these realms. And then we have to really witness this and experience it for ourselves, because I can tell you, this is my truth and my experience and what I've witnessed as we go into these frequencies. This is what everyone talks about, that we don't have the polarities, but it's more important for each of us to experience it. And so, you know, if this is something that is really resisting coming in, then what I would, you know, offer as an experiment is try one of these ancient meditation techniques where we're holding those polarities and see what happens, because it is a universal experience that we then go into peace and love, right? So all that being said, it's not that right and wrong don't exist. It's that they don't exist in the frequencies that we're coming into. And so I say it that way. On this level, I choose not to perceive things and operate things on this level because I'm here to hold the light to say, hey, there's this other level. Don't you remember? Remember who you are when we're unified? So that's my role. But not to disregard anyone's experience, because when we're in it, it absolutely feels real. When we're in the suffering, it's real.
Yeah,
I've had plenty. It's real when I'm experiencing it, and I will fight you about it when I'm in it. So, right?
Yeah.
But the purpose is I'm here to hold that light in a different perspective, a different layer of the game.
That's beautiful. You know, when you're speaking there, the word judgment came up to me, and I think that's a big part of the quote unquote right and wrong stuff is like judgment. We're making judgments as to whether or not something, just because something isn't the way that you would do it, doesn't necessarily make it wrong. And I think that, you know, I interviewed Rob Schwartz. I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but he did Your Soul's Gift and Your Soul's Plan. And I think he's got another book out. Interviewed him like 2 years ago or something, all about your pre-birth plan. So really what you came here to do and how you set yourself up and the lessons that you're learning and the people who are playing with you in that space. And when I read that book, and I'm just getting covered in goosebumps, by the way, when I read that book, it made me almost understand a little bit more about the fact that other people's journeys aren't really my business or my problem, because it's their journey unique to them. So, you know, even if we look at the story of, you know, let's say there's this person and then they go and they steal money because their family is starving. Well, okay, is it wrong? But their family was starving. Well, what about the person who owns the store? Well, maybe there was a lesson for them in like being more generous and not hoarding as much. Or maybe there was a lesson there for, you know, like the family and the children to understand that their parent is willing to do anything to like provide for them. And that grows this unconditional love. I'm getting covered in goosebumps.
Yeah.
Unconditional love and like growing in compassion and support for the other ways their parenting style wasn't the best. So, you know, that's just a small rant about how we don't always know either, do we? And the minute we come in with a judgment or a label is almost the minute when we go, oh, I'm going to shut all this down. Whereas you're almost saying, yeah, but when we learn to be here in the now and we learn to look through the eyes of love, we see all is in divine order and all is the oneness and we are all in it together. And there's no good and bad as we play these different roles and learn these different parts.
Yes, absolutely. It's interesting that you brought that up. One of the memories that has come to me is part of my pre-birth planning with my mom. And I shared this with her shortly after my awakening where, you know, and my family's very open. So a little bit of the history, I was born into a family where there was abuse happening. My father was physically abusing my mother pretty intensely. Until I was 8 when they separated. And a memory that I had was we were both excited, both my mom and I, planning this in. She said, okay, I'm going to get into this situation and it's going to shape your world this way. And we were both excitedly planning this.
Wow.
So I shared that with her. Also, the reason that I'm open sharing this is because my dad is one of my heroes. He actually wrote a book on how to stop being abusive. So I always like to add that in because
that
that's
made me
a
feel
pretty,
so emotional.
I come from a truly incredible family.
Wow.
Even on this plane, right? We're all amazing. But it is, I was very much taught about, you know, transformation all the way through. Yeah, I have incredible people in my family. So that being said, I remember how excited we both were to enact these different roles. And we just don't know. I mean, I talk to a lot of people. I've had the gift of being maybe naive right from the beginning. I was sharing my awakening story and people were looking at me like, you have seven heads. And I was like, huh, this is normal for me. So, but I was sharing, right? I was sharing, like, I owned a business. I sent out an email as I sold the business to like 3,000 people. Hey friends, I'm going through an awakening. So I have spoken to a lot of people and they've shared their stories with me. And I've heard some incredible stories about other people who have gone through very traumatic things who remember or in those moments witness their higher selves talking about what was occurring, perpetrator, victim. Let's talk about this from this higher plane and then coming back into the body and being unconscious. There's so much that's happening on the on these planes, I'll say, that when we witness it from our higher self perspective, it truly is not what we expect, not what we expect at all.
How did your mom react when you told her about that memory? Did she have some feeling of familiarity with that? Was that a difficult thing for her to believe, you know?
You know, it's interesting because, and this is sharing a little bit of her personally, but I think she'd be okay with it. She was really apologizing for, and this is where I'm going to cry. It's been a cryy day. she was really apologizing for the things that happened when I was a child and wishing that she could do it over. And I said, I need to tell you what I've seen. Like, I hold no, I'm not upset at all about any of it. Because one, even if I hadn't seen that, I've really moved into a place where, man, I don't have it all figured out. We're all doing our best. Yeah. And I'm very clear on that. I have messed up enough to say, you know, messed up. Of course, I've been told so many times that we can't mess it up and we're never doing anything wrong. But guess why I've heard that? Because I'm going to my guide saying, I've messed up again. How have I totally messed up again? And I hear you can't mess it up. You can't. So I've got so much forgiveness running through me because I witness myself doing things that I don't really like. If I were more conscious, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of forgiveness in me for that, for people around me. But yeah, I needed to share that with her because of her feeling so bad about it.
Of course.
And
yeah,
I think it helped. I think it helped. I would like to feel that that helped. And
I'm sure it would have even on that higher level, right? Because I think sometimes what happens, you know, and I imagine you, you know, out in the world, your beautiful light shining brightly. And just, you know, I think what we forget is that when we allow ourselves to shine brightly and forgive ourselves and be compassionate with ourselves and look back and go, wow, I can't believe I did that. I would never do that again the same way now. Or maybe you would if you weren't conscious at the moment, being present, you know, and you just reacted, because sometimes that also happens where people catch us off guard and we, you know, we aren't who we really are for a moment. We step into some kind of pattern, but we allow other people to shine brightly as well. You know, we give off, we emit these kind of these good vibes. And I think there's this whole trickle on effect that sort of happens. And yeah, and I love that you shared that. So thank you for that. What part do emotions play in the journey of joyful creation and knowing whether or not, I mean, we've already established there's no right and wrong in the higher sense, but we've also established that as humans here, we do have this right and wrong that we tend to go down. And we do, you know, we are saying that also being aware of the roles we play, the judgments we have, not knowing what other people are dealing with their own lives. But right. Do you use your emotions to guide you? Like, for example, when I'm doing something, if I feel good about it, I am going all in on that thing. And the minute I feel anxiety or worry, I go, oh, something to clear here. I need more information. Do I need to take a break? How does it work for you? And how do emotions kind of fit into the whole, you know, concept of creation?
Yes. Well, I think it can be helpful to look at the word feelings in two different ways, because emotions are really a part of the mental plane of existence. So we have the physical plane of existence, then we have the mental, which we can also call the astral plane. And there's a lot going on in each of these dimensions. And then, you know, we've got that oneness consciousness beyond that. And beyond that, it's just like wild geometric form. And it's like, then it becomes a bit unrecognizable to the human self. But when we talk about emotions, or when we talk about feelings, there's also the way of defining feelings as almost more the perception of things. And it's helpful to say those as slightly different, because our perception of things doesn't always equate our emotions. Our emotional state can inform us of what we like and what we don't like, what's preferred and what's not preferred, so that we can make choices that really help us. What I've been shown with emotions is we are actually moving into realms where our emotions are not what they are right now. We won't actually be experiencing the heavier emotions anymore. We won't be experiencing, because, you know, if we are present, if we are deeply present, let me back up a little bit. Emotions are our interpretation of experiences. So it's a filtration system. If we are present with something, our emotions are actually going to be neutral, or the way that neutrality feels in these higher frequencies, it's joy. It's joy. It's unconditional joy. And so we won't actually have the emotional experiences that we have previously had, because we won't view things as separate. Now, this is a process, right? So right. What we're doing now is we're learning to trust ourselves and say, oh, I witness that based on what I'm experiencing, it's evoking this sort of translation. And sometimes it's a very pure translation, meaning even anger can be a very pure translation of an experience, but it is still a translation, which means it's still secondary to the present moment experience. So we're learning how to be very present and witness our emotions, but they're not the forefront. Does that make sense?
I guess we might need to hash it out a little bit more, because okay. When I'm thinking about my own journey here, right?
Yes.
I feel that I am claircognizant as well. So I know things. I just know, and not like a, like I would say claircognizant is not my specialty, because I know some people are very good at claircognizance, but I know my own truth. And I know when I hear something and it's true, and when I hear something and it's not true. Okay. I feel that at a deep, deep, deep level. Yes. Now, when I get confirmation, I get goosebumps. When I get a feeling of maybe starting a new project or entertaining in a new idea or something like that, I feel that all over my body. And when something comes up and I don't feel that, I know that maybe to be a no.
Yes. And that's perfect, because this is where we can really witness that feeling has two sort of different ways of looking at it. It can either be emotion or a sort of perception that is a little bit more of that neutral. And so the perception is our witnessing and having that we're in a physical world. So every experience is going to be somehow tangible to us. We are going to run it through the body.
Yeah.
And so the emotional landscape is sometimes that further out layer, but yes, the feeling, the perception is definitely, it's our antenna, right? It's how we're perceiving and experiencing the world. And so, yes, definitely. I agree with you on that.
So you're kind of saying that feelings and emotions are different, because emotions are maybe like a heightened variation of something, whereas feelings are kind of our internal compass.
Yes.
Sort of, so but then feelings, I'm trying to think about, do I feel, like we feel emotions because we feel happy, or, but then we feel truth. So is that,
Yes. And I love that we're diving into this. They're very interchangeable, but they're not the same thing, right? So here's what we've got. When we talk about emotions, what's happening is we are, and it happens in a split second, and we're often not conscious of this. But with emotions, we have an experience, we translate it, and then we interpret it into how we feel about it. Do we feel good about it? Do we feel negative about it? Do we feel happy or sad? And that's why our emotions are going to start to become less of a thing when we move into the unconditional realms of oneness.
Because we're not filtering through anything.
There's less filtering.
Everything just kind of is, because when you're an observer, you just observe things as they are versus putting it through the filter of good or bad, which therefore kicks off an emotion.
Exactly. Exactly. And if we're not continuously interpreting things as good and bad, then we will see it all and we will receive it all as love. And then our emotions are not tied to the experience. Our emotions get to be unconditional. Now, that being said, what you were talking about, the feeling experience, we're still going to be running things through our bodies, and our bodies are going to tell us different signals. And then I would say the emotion would kind of be a further along interpretation of that whole process. So the feeling and the experience of the feeling can still be very neutral, and it can help us to make neutral choices based purely on what's kind of most aligned with what we desire. So it can be more of a preference or a desire-based choice rather than a choice made from repulsion or attachment.
It's very,
and I know we're getting really deep into some stuff right here at the end.
Yeah, no, totally. Right here. Exactly.
Like a whole new box.
Yeah. I think that if I really kind of look at it, I very often feel feelings, not as many emotions, I guess, because I'm very even tempered. Like I'm pretty much always the same.
Yeah.
In terms of.
And that's what I heard you describing for sure.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to delineate or to separate those two, because I think what we're experiencing is so often it's a split second, and we can't sometimes separate the emotion from the experience. And the emotion tells us this is inherently wrong, but really the emotion is our interpretation of it. And it's okay for us to not like it, you know, but our emotion, separating that emotion, actually brings us into our power so that we can be present with whatever is and make a conscious choice instead of a reactive choice or a choice based on attachment and things like that.
So would you say, though, that if we were helping other people who are on this journey, for example, emotions is an easier way to explain how you feel, or maybe it's not. Like if I just started to swap out emotions to what does your feeling say? What is your inner, you know? Yeah, I guess I was just kind of wondering about that.
Yeah. And it's good to, it is wonderful to know what emotion. That's actually part of the detachment process. And when I say detachment process, I don't mean, oh, we detach from ourselves. We detach the emotion from the experience. And when we do that, we get a little bit of our power back, because then that same experience can happen and we can view it differently. We can experience it differently. We can feel differently about it. And what we don't recognize is that when we are attaching our emotion to experiences, we're also at the mercy of what's around us, as opposed to being the conscious chooser in these experiences.
Well, that's very cool. So how do we become the conscious chooser, and what does that look like? You know, do you kind of sit down, you know, Abraham Hicks always talks about in your workshop, and you plan your day and you think about the things you want to attract. And do you work like that? Do you think about the things that you want and you have a vision board? Do you just sit there and your maybe your intention is to be as present as possible so that you can be aware of the thoughts that you're thinking, the decisions that you're making, and that you're not falling into unconsciousness where at times things just kind of unravel?
Yes. My main practice is channeling. And I also use a lot of, if anyone has heard of the law of assumption, it's really, I believe, the same as the law of attraction. It's sort of, you know, all of these games that we play and getting as present as possible with that. So I use a lot of the techniques in the law of assumption realm of learning, but also channeling is my main practice. And because channeling brings me very present. So just super briefly, my definition of channeling is being very present. And inherent to being present is opening to a new higher frequency layer of this whole game. And so when I open to that layer, I receive information that's not from my mind. It's from a higher frequency plane. And that can be from my higher self. It can be from guides. It can be from, you know, my interdimensional family as a starseed. So it can be from a lot of different sources, but it is beyond my mind. And that helps me so much, because in that, as I'm channeling, I'm becoming very present. A lot of times I have my eyes closed so that I can listen beyond my mind.
Yes.
And I'm tuning into a different frequency. And what that does is, you know, because I've been practicing it for over 10 years, it's just instant. It brings me into myself, my true self, my higher self. And I see everything so differently. You know, I can be in the midst of an emotional upset and go into a channeling space, and I'm laughing about it because it's a completely different perception.
It's like a reset.
It kind of zooms me out.
Resets you in a way. Hey, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we all feel, maybe I shouldn't say we all, but I mean, most people feel fabulous after meditation, which is exactly what a channeling would be. So taking that intentional time to connect with God or divine or creator or higher self, you know, the oneness of all that there is. But what if you want a car, Allison? What do you do then?
I do exactly that. Okay, so I'll give you some really...
You just channel and then you laugh about it and you get a car? Like, what?
I do. I actually teach a course. It's called Limitless Creator, where I go into how I manifest and how I create. Because I did manifest my dream car. It was everything that I wrote down on the list, right? So that's one of the fun things that I've done. But the way that let's see, how can I synopsize this? I know what I want, and I imagine myself as the person who has it. So again, we're kind of jumping into a new lane here, but a lot of times when we try and manifest, where we get a little off is we think I'm manifesting something outside of myself.
Right.
But always we are manifesting a new version of ourselves. It's the version of ourselves that has the car that we want. Who is that person? Are they confident? Do they know how to manage money? Do they take care of their things? Do they believe themselves to be magical? What are those things? And then I work on becoming that person. So that's like a super synopsized version of how I create and how I manifest in terms of like doing those fun manifestation games.
I love that. And that's a big part about, I have a program that's all about helping people to grow in confidence in 21 days. And that's one of the things that I focus on is like being the person you want to be now.
Yes.
You know, every decision that we make is taking us towards that person or away from it. And I think when you were talking as well, something that really came to mind was the idea that, you know, time isn't really real, right? So when we think, you know, you were talking about, we believe things be outside of ourselves. Yet not only that, we believe things will come later on versus they're already here.
Yes. I remember when The Secret came out, and one of the big lines that I remember from, I watched the movie, and one of the big lines that I remember from that movie is somebody says, thank goodness there's a time delay. And then there's like an elephant that like poops in someone's living room. And I always thought that was so funny. But I've learned there actually isn't a time delay. It is all now.
Yeah.
The only delay is the amount of time that it takes for us to believe it, to become it. It's not even a belief. It's the amount of time that it takes for us to be in the reality within where we have that. So it really can be instant. In fact, it can happen yesterday. That's why time isn't really real, because we can actually manifest something to have happened earlier in our life and shift. We can change the past. We can change the future because it's not linear. So I feel like we're going all over the map here, but yeah, we can play with all of it.
What's your thoughts on that? I remember I interviewed a guy, Rick Schnabel, and he was talking about how he helps people who have trauma to go back to those situations and to create a different narrative, like almost to be the observer and to see that everything was working, like is in divine perfection. I mean, I'm paraphrasing here the whole idea, but is to look at it in a different way. So do you teach people to do that, or do you do that as well yourself, or do you not hang out too much in the past and the future versus being here in the now where everything is perfect?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what? I play with it. I play with it all. In fact, I change the past. This is a process that I work with every single day. My guides have told me with certain things that I'm working with, do this meditation every day, change the past every day, until it becomes real. And there are certain things that I have gone back and changed to the point where other people who have lived through the past story in a different version have told me my new version. For example, you know, I went back and imagined that I always tanned when I was a child. And then my mom said, didn't you always tan? And that wasn't actually the reality that I lived, right? So I've gone back and I've changed other things according to what I would have preferred at the time, because it changes who I am now. And then that change is reflected in my world. So I play with this every single day. This is one of my favorite games. And it is something that I teach in that Limitless Creator course. I have a specific meditation that I was actually trained into, Accelerated Evolution is the coaching program that I went through for this particular way of unifying and changing the past. And it's really powerful. I've seen it. Teal Swan has a meditation that she teaches for changing the past. I see it a lot in the Love Assumption communities. I'm trying to think of other places that I've seen it. It's actually gaining some momentum as we move out of the realms of the firmness of the past is the past and can't be changed. We're starting to play with that. Oh. And there's just infinite play with all of it. So
I think it also gives people back their power, which will help them with forgiveness and confidence and all that, because it's like you don't, because some people want the past to continue to define their story now for excuses, for playing small, for, you know, and I think that when we remember that, you know, those are just old thoughts, it's just old stories we keep telling ourselves over and over again. But when you can maybe give somebody a tool such as going into meditation and replaying the idea, or however, you know, hypnosis or whatever it is, and change it and swap it out for something you'd prefer and make that your new reality. I think a big part about it is that people don't always forget the past, but there's not that emotional trigger to it in the same. So they're able to be more of the observer. Have you seen that in your experience?
Oh, you can forget the past. It's just a lot less firm than we have ever believed. You can forget the past. You can create a new past. You can remember the past, but choose a different version of it. So you have both memories. It's very flexible. And I think a lot of times I have experienced personally how destabilizing it is to know how flexible it is. Our human forms, like I said, the mind is built to repeat stories, to repeat programs. And so it can feel really destabilizing when we're like, wait, you mean this is all stories? You mean none of it's really, really real? And so, you know, sometimes those attachments are to hold it together. And so they benefit us. So, you know, if we're trying to restructure all of our mental paradigms, it can be destabilizing. So we can be really gentle with ourselves through the process.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for being here on the show, Allison. A big conversation, and I know we've gone over time. So thank you for spending that extra time with me as well. I know we'll definitely have to have you back on the show, because I feel like we're at the tip of the iceberg here with all these questions and discussions left unsaid. If you wanted to say anything, though, to our listener at home, if there's anything I didn't ask you that you feel called to speak on, how can people get a hold of you? You mentioned some of the programs that you have and the fabulous books that you have as well. Please do take the time that you want to speak and to pitch and all that.
Oh, thank you so much, Lauren. It's been really fun to talk to you. I love that you just have all of these different questions and tangents that you want. We could go on for a long time. So I've had a lot of fun, and we'll definitely have to dive back in. Yes. So one of my favorite ways to connect is if you are watching this on YouTube, or if you're listening to this, specifically on YouTube, I'll go in and read the comments and I'll say hi. So definitely leave a comment. Also, feel free to get in touch with me via my website. It's allisonholly.com. I'm on pretty much every social platform, but I can't say that I necessarily connect on Messenger through all of those platforms, because some of them I'm like, let me just get on there and post. So I'm email would be better. And also my books are, the most recent one is called Ecstatic Playground. And the previous one is The Era of the True Creator. They're both available on Amazon and in some bookstores. I'll be going on a book tour this year. I'm actually starting in just a couple months. So check my website for in-person events, because I'm trying to go all over the US. So there will be a lot of different stops, and I'd love to meet people in person.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. And I look forward to our next conversation, as I'm sure it's going to be just as exciting as this one was.
Thank you. Bye.
Hi. Thanks so much for listening to the episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please leave us a review where you listen to your podcasts, and share it with your friends. Thank you. New episodes every Thursday.